The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fernelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage, from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
Hey, y'all. I'm Bud Elliott, and this is my college football summer school series on Cover 3. I bring on the team experts from the 24/7 sports staff and ask them the questions I care about. No fluff. Which players will be toughest to replace? What position groups are sneakily better or worse than I realize? We get you the scoop on each team in 20 minutes or less. Let's go. All right, y'all. It's Florida State time. For that, I'm going to bring on my man, Brendan Sanoa, Knowles 24/7, the best, the absolute best Florida State site in the business. And I'm excited to talk this one. I've actually done summer school in Tallahassee, so like the only school I think I've ever done summer school in. Brendan, what's going on, man?
Hey, Bud. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be back again with even more optimism than last year's summer school. Moving in the right direction. That's a nice thing for business and just personally as well.
If they overachieve this year like they overachieved the expectations last year, you better cancel all those plans for December and January. That's going to be a lot of travel for the playoff run. Let's recap last year briefly. Did win 10 ball games for the first time in quite a while. Bill Connelly had him 27th in his final SP Plus ratings. Some services kind of had him, 15th. But I think probably nobody lower than 30th. So a marked improvement. What was the area on this team that you were just blown away by the improvement of?
The passing game in general. And I think if I went back before I started to do this episode and listened to last year's, just to kind of hear some of the talking points, the things we were optimistic on, things we were pessimistic on. I like to think that was one of, if not the leaders of the Jordan Travis fan club. And even last year on this thing, I thought that he was maybe capped as an average passer at the Power Five level. He ended up, depending on what service you recommend and listen to, like Pro Football Focus had him as the number one passer in Power Five. His QBR pre-ESPN was also like top five. So what Jordan Travis did far exceeded even my expectations, which I thought were pretty lofty to go into it. And so much of that is his growth and the strides he's made, the way the offense was built around with Mike Gravel and Alex Atkins and Tony Tokars. I thought they all did a really great job with Jordan. And the wide receivers, Bud, I think were just better than I thought they would be. Johnny Wilson specifically, like, turned into a guy who's like a fringe household name going into this year because he's so unique in what he does. And he had one game of the dropsies, maybe two. Those were things we were concerned about. It cost him against NC State, but generally, like, he was one of the most explosive wide receivers in the country. So all that kind of melded together to far exceed, I think, what we thought Florida State could do from an explosiveness and balance standpoint on offense. And I think that probably gets you a win or two higher than what we were expecting going into the year.
Let's jump right into the offense. I know my friend Bill Connelly had him 33rd last year. I found myself constantly adjusting the offensive rating in my betting system up to where like there's no way they're going to score, you know, this little points. And to finally, like, there was something they were doing that some of the advanced metrics weren't capturing. And I think part of it is Jordan's efficiency there and his growth. I mean, 49% success rate on dropbacks, like pretty rarely sacked, right? I mean, yeah. Sacks on 4% of his dropbacks is nuts. Protected the football at 24-5, touchdown interception. It's sort of absurd. Like, I'm not going to imply that the guy is capped out. Everybody can get better. If he can get better, where can he get better? Because, like, he's pretty much like they're very close to getting everything they can get out of him, I think. But, like, if it's possible, where can he get better?
I thought he had capped out last spring as a passer. And I was like, maybe he's an average passer. That's fine. And above average running ability. Like, that's a good power five quarterback. Right. And he kept growing. So, like, in general, Bud, and this applies to Jordan Travis, because I think he's really much so like the embodiment of what Mike Norvell has done with this program as far as like maximizing assets and gradual growth year over year. I think Jordan represents that super well. And so what I'm going to say about Jordan, I think, is reflective of the entire program. Under Mike Norvell, I haven't seen the ceiling yet, I guess. And I can predict a ceiling. You can predict a ceiling. Like, I think we could think that maybe it's coming for Jordan, but I've learned to not set that as like the ultimate expectation. So if he does keep progressing, I mean, just even last year, like, we didn't think he could attack the middle of the field. And then he ended up being one of the best quarterbacks in the country in attacking the middle of the field. And part of that was what defenses were giving them. But that was the evolution in his game. It's like there wasn't a marked weakness of things that he couldn't do. So as we enter 2023 season, like, if Jordan Travis continues to grow, then the Heisman hype that he has is legitimately, like, it's realistic. It's warranted to at least be in the conversation. I know Caleb Williams and Drake May are going to get more fanfare and deservedly so, I think, for what they did last year. But, like, Jordan's supporting cast is going to be better than it was last year, at least on paper. Like, they add, I know we'll get into it, they add skill talent. They bring back most key pieces on the offensive line and probably improve the offensive line. I think the defense will be a little bit better too, which should give Jordan the ball more too. Like, man, there's a lot of reason for optimism in his game. Even in the spring, like, his good moments were as good as we've ever seen them. Like, when he throws the ball and rips it, now it's with a level of confidence. That's been the biggest thing about his game. So, yeah, I mean, I have to stop myself from hyping him up too much. And I guess called him like a Heisman candidate a few minutes ago, but like, I think it's legitimate. I think it's real.
You're not exactly out on a limb there saying he's a Heisman candidate. If you just look at the odds, he's right. Like, what, top five, top seven. Oh. I know they've been bet recently, you know, so they're shifting. Like, I think Quinn Ewers got bet yesterday pretty hard, but I mean, like, ultimately, if you're on a team that's going to play 4 or 5 national television games, like, it's not like the ACC is not going to put FSU Miami on one of its channels. There's not that many good teams in the league that they have to put somebody on TV for ratings. The Clemson game, you know, first round and potentially the second round as well of Clemson, in addition to LSU, which is a standalone game that should do a huge number. I mean, if he balls out in those games, he's going to get the national exposure to get votes, especially with a team that has a win total as high as it is. You mentioned the supporting cast. How much do you read into FSU kind of letting Trayshawn Ward walk? It was a very good back and go to Kansas State, right? Like, does that tell you how much they believe in Trey Benson?
As part of the equation, yes. I think there's still meat on the bone for Trey Benson in terms of his growth. He ran for almost 1,000 yards last year. He set PFF's mark for missed tackles forced per carry, whatever metric that PFF uses for that, like in their last 5 or 6 years. And that was him kind of shaking off some rust a little bit too, as a guy who had a catastrophic knee injury 3 seasons ago, and then 2 seasons ago, Oregon was kind of, again, shaking that off. And then his past year was really his first real in-game action of significance. So, like, I think a big reason for the optimism is in your allocating resources with what the Battle's End, FSU's NIL collective did of, like, retaining guys, right? Like, you can only throw so much around. Trey Benson was a priority for them, I think, and deservedly so because of what he can be from an NFL standpoint. But, yeah, like, Trayshawn Ward was a really important back. He led the ACC in yards per carry, I believe, the last 2 years, if not in the top three, like, each of the last 2 seasons. Like, Trayshawn Ward's very good. You saw his value in the Oklahoma game. I think what Trayshawn Ward does so well, Bud, is, like, when things aren't developing, like, he can make something happen. Even if it's not always explosive, he finds a way. With that in mind, like, I think the other part of the equation is belief in Rodney Hill. And the for the national audience who's not familiar with him, he's a redshirt freshman this season. He was a true freshman last year, lower ranked guy, like a mid-tier three-star, but someone who did very well, like in the GPS tracking in the offseason, good explosiveness, looked good in the spring, got progressively better. Frankly, was maybe the most explosive back that we saw in practice consistently. Some of that was increased workload because he wasn't practicing or playing as much, so you could practice them more. But when he got his chances in the game, but he was really good. So I think as a coaching staff, you look at, okay, do we have one more year of Trayshawn Ward and have to pay a premium for him, or do we get multiple years of Rodney Hill? Because if Rodney Hill doesn't play this season, does he stick around for a third one? I don't know. So it's that combination of, okay, you want to keep Trey Benson as your priority, makes total sense. He is a stud, someone who probably should rush for about 1,200 yards this year if things go as planned. But Rodney Hill is an important part of the offense moving forward. Lawrence Toefele is a nice like supplementary piece, skill, gadgety guy. And so that becomes your nucleus for your running game. And I like the balance. I like the different options they have there. Rodney actually reminds me a lot of Trayshawn Ward and how he carries the ball, how he runs as a back. So, yeah, man, and the running back group, sipping on the Kool-Aid there, it should be a really good group.
And, of course, those running backs get to benefit from the fact that defenses do have to account for Jordan Travis's legs on pretty much every snap, which is, you know, it's kind of like an extra half blocker in the scheme, if you want to kind of term it that way. Mm-hmm. Last year, receiver did take a massive step forward. Johnny Wilson was a big hit. Like, his drop rate was 8%, which is still like, I mean, that's going to get him dropped down to the draft if that doesn't, you know, get fixed. Because like you said, like the NC State game, it's basically not all on him, obviously, because the offensive line had plenty of struggles and defense couldn't figure out how to stop a glorified running back in the second half when Devin Leary went down for the Wolfpack. But his ability to be what a top 20, top 10 receiver type area last year, despite the drops, is really pretty impressive. And then they add Keon Coleman to Michigan State. So I know you love playing Byers Sanone. I want to play Byers Sanone here.
All right.
Byers Sanone, Keon Coleman is FSU's number one receiver this year.
All right. I guess it depends when this airs, right? But
yeah,
I'm going to buy it. Okay. And when we do our 40 most important player countdown, which is a good way to get through the summer, as well as a good exercise of like reflecting on the roster. I think I had Keon Coleman. I had Keon Coleman at fifth. I had Johnny Wilson at fourth, but like they're tiered up the exact same. And I think Keon's going to do more from a stat standpoint because I think his game's a little bit more well-rounded. Whereas Johnny Wilson to this point, and again, I don't want to set ceilings on guys because they keep running through them the last year and a half or so, or a season and a half or so, but Johnny Wilson, more of the deep, not speed guy because he's not super fast, but he's a strider. And so he's one of the best deep threats in the country because if you get him one-on-one, he's going to be able to get enough separation and then have that catch radius at 6'7" to be able to go up and get the ball and win it. Keon Coleman, I think, can do a little bit more of the dirty work and does a lot of things really well that Jordan Travis does well, running over the middle of the field. He can take the top off the defense. Slants, curls, some of the more intermediate stuff that'll help Jordan Travis out. So I think they're going to be tiered very similarly with each other. It's going to be kind of your preference. Do you want chocolate ice cream? Do you want strawberry? No one really likes vanilla. It's just going to depend. But like both those guys, I think, are exceptional talents. Seeing Keon Coleman in person a little bit this summer, Bud, has been really impressive. You understand why he was a commodity in the transfer portal. The fact that FSU was able to find someone who in my estimation, probably is going to be like a day two draft pick or should be from a talent standpoint that late in the cycle in the transfer portal. It's kind of crazy. And I think he just totally changes the complexion of your passing game. So that was a low point for FSU two seasons ago. Last year, I think we thought it would be better. We didn't know how much better. I speak for both of us there and people covering the team generally. You mentioned it was an improved group. It had a ton of room to grow, right? And speaking of Wright, like now you bring back Winston Wright, like what, that's a wild card for this group because he was probably going to be their best wide receiver before his offseason injury. Like I don't know what to expect from the passing game other than I expect there to be a ton of options. And I think it's going to be good.
You mentioned Winston Wright, who, I mean, was easily the most proven receiver that they had taken in the portal last year, right? Coming from West Virginia, he caught 60, 70 balls or whatever it was. And I think also returned punts for West Virginia for a time. he gets in the car crash, doesn't play last year, did go through spring. Based on what you've seen in spring, like, do you think that he's going to be a player who plays a lot for them, or do you think they're going to play more two tight end? Because, like, the lack of a proven slot, I mean, if we're trying to nitpick this lineup, I guess the lack of a proven slot, if he's not back, is maybe one of the areas to nitpick.
It'll depend. So when I look at the slot position, yeah, because you lose Micah Pittman, who was fine. He did well and helped them win games last year, right? So Winston Wright, as far as a pure slot receiver, probably projects the most of that. From this past spring, I think there were moments where you're like, okay, that's, you saw why they were so excited about him when he first came to Tallahassee from West Virginia. But I think where, again, I go back to this, I don't know where to put the ceiling on it, because when we saw him at the end of last season towards practices, when he's able to start going a little bit more,
yeah,
I was like, he felt bad. Like, I wasn't.
You doubt the guy would ever play again.
Right. Yeah. And then in the spring, you're like, oh, he'll help you. I don't know to what capacity, bud, but like, he looks like he belongs at this level. So what does an extra 6 months, 5 months look like? I don't know, but he will help them, I think, from the slot, but also the slot's going to be super diverse this year, because you're going to have Jaheim Bell, who brought him from South Carolina. He probably will be a guy who plays in the slot some, plays in the backfield, plays a true tight end role, plays like an H-back type of deal. Like, he's going to play around different spots, but like, he was a prized recruit for FSU in the transfer portal when he was a true tight end or a more pass receiving tight end for South Carolina in 2021. He was one of the more explosive tight ends in the country. So he's going to be used as a sub wide receiver kind of. And then Lawrence Toe-Philly will also occasionally be used as a sub slot wide receiver. So there's three guys, I think, that you look at like immediately who have a chance there. And I'm not even getting to the depth of like Ja'Kai Douglas. Can you move Darian Williamson around if he's healthy? Like, we even talked about Kentron Portier. He was probably the most consistent wide receiver in the spring. And he may not get a chance to start this year because of what the depth has become.
They seem really deep at the outside receiver. I mean, like, inside, I guess, is a little more of a question, because if Wright's not back, you probably play more two tight end stuff with Biscuit and Morlock, I would assume, unless one of the young guys, you know, really steps up to be a dependable slot. Let's talk O-line, because, like, for a long time, O-line was just an embarrassment in Tallahassee, kind of from that 2017 to 2021 range, I guess. Like, a solid five seasons, they were just...
Yeah, and 18 might have been the worst of any Power 5 position group. 18 was the low point.
18 was depressing. I mean, it was like, when what's-his-name went down in practice, it was like, okay, well, they're screwed. Like, they don't have anybody. Yeah.
Couldn't play football. They were starting Arthur. I was thinking about this the other day, and FSU fans are going to be like, Arthur Williams, who was a converted defensive tackle, like, that offseason was starting for them at guard.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Yeah, that was great. Not great.
This makes year, appreciate now.
So you lose Dylan Gibbons, right? Who was was he first team all ACC? Sure.
I think he was second or first team, but he was an all ACC high end guard.
Yeah, like a very dependable guy. Not like I don't think he got drafted, right? So like next level guy, but like a good college player. Mm-hmm. They get Demetri Emanuel back. Speaking of good, you know, like good dependable college players for a seventh year, thanks to the whole, you know, COVID thing. You get Robert Scott, Murray Smith's back. You lose Jazzin Turrentine, who really wasn't going to play, I don't think, except for the fact that Bless Harris got hurt in the opening ball game. Bless Harris, a tackle they took from Lamar last year. And then they get three more transfers in Jeremiah Byers, Casey Roddick, and Keandre Jones. It's obvious, like anybody can tell you, this group is experienced. How good do you think this group can be?
What would you say they were last year in a Power Five standpoint? Like average?
I would say they're top half, but not like top half, but like not top quarter, maybe.
Okay.
There's like there's like 65 Power Five teams. So like I would say they're in that sort of like, I don't know, 25 to 35 range.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's probably where I would say too, like in that percentile makes sense. And like you articulated really well for years, like you got to get to average. Like that was your baby. And they, I think,
I still have David Hale because he did the Wake Forest tracking thing because like he thought the 2012 or whatever year it was with Wake, it was hilariously bad. And I was like, I'm going to use this. He's like, do it.
I remember talking to someone within the program when they were going to play Wake Forest this past year on the defensive side of the ball. And they were like, they have all these old offensive linemen and how like difficult that was, even though they didn't have like a bunch of NFL guys this past year, they had veteran offensive linemen who knew what they were doing. And that was a problem for the defensive side of the ball. They were worried about that. Well, FSU now has a bunch of veteran offensive linemen. And I think that will provide stability. It raises the floor. Right. But we were talking about how good it can be. I mean, there's variables to it. I thought that Bless Harris, once he shook off some rust in the spring, may have been the best offensive lineman they had, which I wasn't expecting going into the spring. RX is an old guy's like did a good breakdown of him on their channel of what he did in the spring game against Jared Verse. And he was really good. Jeremiah Byers, Chris Knee isn't allowed to be in the same restaurant as because a restraining order. He loves him so much. Like there are guys who have like legitimate NFL tools that are expected to start or push for starting reps in what is a fairly deep group. And so, yeah, like I think as we judge this offensive line, but I think like the biggest way we're going to be able to judge if it's taken the leap from no longer being a liability, which it is to average, if it makes that next jump to becoming an asset, is seeing what they do in short yardage situations, right? And FSU had to get, I think Mike Norvell pushed back on it being quote unquote cute this past year, but like they did have to get a little gimmicky at times in the red zone. And if you don't have to bank on that all the time, and if you see FSU have success consistently in short yardage situations, then I think that's how we view it. And I think they have potential to do that. At the very least, man, we've seen injuries really derail them at times the last couple of years. I think that gets taken away. Like if Darius Washington is your eighth best offensive lineman, cool. You can win with that. He might even be better than that because he's had a good offseason. But the point is like if he's the guy you're relying on to be the guy after the guy, like you're in a great situation. I think that's where FSU is trending towards, being a really good one, maybe even a great situation with depth. Can it take the next step and like have a forceful starting five? Yeah, I think that's on the table to discuss. It's reasonable.
And they should be a better red zone team if you consider the personnel around. Like you have a very mobile quarterback who, you know, kind of a grown man body now. Benson's a big back. You have, multiple tight ends that I think you trust, in addition to the fact that like your outside guys are physical guys that don't need a whole lot of space in which to succeed. And it really does, like for red zone execution and short yardage stuff, it does come down to, the offensive line being able to get more push, right? Like, and I understand they would bristle at the idea of getting cute, but it's somewhat to their credit that they were able to find ways to trick people when they couldn't just block them straight ahead. Like, what's the alternative? Not getting cute and getting your brains, like your brains bashed in. So, that's definitely an area. I'm glad you highlighted that. I was going to, actually didn't have it on my sheet, but I should have asked you about it. Like that's the short yardage stuff for sure. And I think there'll be something telling. I have a question I ask at the end of the show always that if the offensive line is not the answer for it, is generally a surprise. Let's flip on over to defense here. Last year defense, Conley had him 35th. I had him a little bit lower than that. I know you and I have disagreed about like, I kind of like, look, they played a whole bunch of, really kind of sketchy or hurt back, like either backups hurt guys or hurt backups down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like they did do to those backups what an improving defense would do, right? You think it's just sort of, there's kind of the covariance question that I think they'll have a chance to answer on night one. Like, can they be good against good? we'll see. To your credit, the kid who was the backup in the bowl game for Oklahoma, I don't know how much you've been following draft stuff, at right tackle is actually getting some draft buzz. Yeah, from
people were freaking out because he handled Jared Verse fairly well.
Even he whipped Jared him Verse on some plays.
Yeah. Jared Verse did have some big plays too.
They went back and forth. Like, it was a good battle, you know? Yeah, Verse got after him too. It was Jim, whatever his name is, Nagy, I think.
Yeah.
Is that right? Senior Bowl guy? Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. He was giving him some love. So
yeah. I remember watching that game and then watching after, and I was like, that offense, like, if that's your backup offensive line, like, come on. Like, how many Power 5 teams would have been cool with that?
Yeah, we did Oklahoma 2 days ago. I don't know what order in which these will be released, but they're like, yeah, we think like two high end tackles, backups. Let's not talk about that. So the defense returns basically everybody. I mean, you lose Derek McClendon. I'm not going to like say it's not any kind of loss, but I'm not convinced he was going to be a full time starter this year with some of the guys nipping at his heels. And you lose Jamie Robinson in the secondary. Is there a part of this defense who I think is a loss, like legitimately, mm-hmm. and a good player who it was a draft pick? Is there a unit on this defense that you think can help it take the next step and just be a dominant force?
I think looking at the composition of the defense I have in front of me and just the sheer numbers they have on the defensive line, they have 16 to 17 scholarship players. And about more than half of those guys are proven to some extent or another at either Power 5 level or high-end G5 guys, right? Because they brought in transfers like Braden Fisk. They brought in, Daryl Jackson from Miami, who had some good moments there. Gilbert Edmond was the starter at South Carolina at defensive end. So those are some of the transfer additions, in addition to finding a way to retain Fabian Lovett. When he's healthy, like, I want to do this project a little bit later on this summer. Like, go back and watch him against LSU. That was really fun. Like, he is a NFL talent. I don't know what round, but like, he's an NFL capable player. But he's older now and has some injury issues. But from a like, there's shades of Timmy Jernigan there. Not comparing him to Timmy directly, but like, there's that I will flip you over and toss an offensive lineman around and be dominant. But you got him. You got Josh Farmer, who is ascending. Daniel Lyons was actually the highest graded defensive lineman they had. And had to play like against Wake a good deal. He had to play against Oklahoma a good deal. He was the highest rated, I think, actually entire one of anyone on the defense last year as a true freshman. Patrick Payton, rookie of the year returning. So I mentioned all these names, and there's others like Dennis Briggs situationally, Malcolm Ray situationally, who have value. The defensive tackle group had issues last year and was supposed to be a strength. Well, Robert Cooper plays with basically one arm all season. Fabian Lovett plays for only half of a season. Some of their reserves were dinged up and not 100%. And like, that's going to happen on the defensive line, right? Like, in the trenches, offensive line, defensive line, like, guys are going to get hurt. What's your insurance policy? And that's why I'm optimistic on the offensive line. Conversely, it's why I'm optimistic on the defensive line as well. Well, not conversely, but like on the other side of the ball. I like the versatility of that group a lot. I like that they can probably toy around with different fronts and go bear and go Okie and go like just standard four-man stuff. Like, you're going to be able to be versatile and mix it up. And it'll be the most talented on paper group that Adam Fuller has had in his time here. Like, what he does with it, can he unlock like every single matchup possible to really maximize this group? Like, that's going to be how we judge him with his full caliber of players this year. Have I talked about Jared Verse yet?
No. Well, we talked about how he had a battle with the Oklahoma offensive tackle.
But like, that's a probable day one, maybe like early day two guy. But he's a top 40 draft pick. I think some early draft odds had him as like a probable top 10 pick if he ascends. And like, getting him back was a huge deal. I do have questions, Bud, about the depth at defensive end at edge rusher. But like, I feel like Jared Verse is a premium player at a premium position that you know what you're getting with him. Yes, losing Derek McClendon hurts a little bit from a depth standpoint because you knew what he was. He was solid. You're going to rely on guys like Byron Turner or Jaden Jones if he gets healthy to kind of take another step forward. But I think you have enough bodies who do different things well enough to where you can kind of mask that a little bit as long as the depth doesn't get into too much from an injury standpoint. So I think the defensive line – in general, it's a long-winded way of me saying, like, I think that's the group that can, if healthy, if they hit their potential, Like, that's what's going to give him a chance to play in the playoffs. Like, that's the one on that side of the ball that'll help.
I kind of always go through in my head, like, how I would answer the questions I'm going to ask. I usually ask, like, if this team exceeds expectations by a lot, who's the guy who stepped up and played way better than I guess the public would expect him to play? Because I think my answer is in this group, but I'm curious what yours is.
We're talking about, are we saying on the defensive side of the ball in general?
I think you can go offense too if you want. I was thinking about this group and it kind of brought it up in my head, the question.
Yeah, better than, I mean, I can go with a handful of guys. Like, looking at, like, I think Shaheem Brown is one who comes to mind. We can go back to defensive line, but I think Shaheem, like, safety depth is shaky. We mentioned the loss of Jamie Robinson. From a talent standpoint, Shaheem Brown has a lot of it. He was the national audience, like, he was your third safety pretty much. He allowed you to move Jamie Robinson into the box and be an effective blitzer last year. Shaheem Brown, like, has a ton of physical tools. For him, it's about, like, consistency, maturity, those type of things entering year three now at Florida State. He was kind of pushed a little bit in the spring, but, like, by the coaching staff of, like, saying, hey, there has to be urgency. You have to practice every single day with consistency to be the guy, because it's going to be important. And he has the ability to do it. I think that's, like, the main thing for me. Like, he has a chance to play on Sundays in a year or two, but, like, he does have to live up to it. So, like, that's the guy of, like, if this defense is going to play, you had him in the top 35, top 40 last year. If they're going to make the jump to top 20 to complement what should be, like, a top 10 offense, and again, give you a chance to be really good, he's the guy who I think unlocks a lot for you. But I'm curious, like, who on the defensive line, like, you're looking at as that kind of X factor.
I was thinking Pat Payton. Like, Payton plays at, like, a level that allows him to be, like, a top 4-round pick and come out, you know, after just three years, like, that's kind of scary, because, like, I think the floor of Verse is a relatively known commodity of healthy. I think the ceiling is still yet to be discovered. Mm-hmm. But
I'd agree.
I mean, if Payton, like, if Payton and Verse stay healthy and Payton really busts out, then that's a difficult thing for opponents to deal with. We won't spend a ton of time on linebacker. You get two, like, solid to good college linebackers back in Deloach and Bethune. Is there anybody among the younger guys, like, and they basically don't come off the field if healthy. Like, is there anybody among the younger guys that would actually threaten them, or is just those two and hope they stay healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the two. I know those are the two. I mean, I like DJ Lundy as a third guy. I think he at least established himself as, like, trustworthy last year. We talked about that going into the year two, as a guy who, like, lost some weight and could be reliable, and he proved to be that. So if you get that from him again, like, that's a win for you to have three guys at a position where you only really play two at a time. The one I'm going to keep an eye on, like, they pushed Omar Graham into a larger role. I think that was the reason why they're okay losing Brendan Gant. And they do like Omar Graham, who's a redshirt freshman. I was like a borderline 3-4-star type of guy two classes ago. They like him, but, like, the one who I'm really interested to see, but is Blake Nicholson. And he was a 4-star recruit this past year. And you just see him in person. Like, he's built, like, with the frame that it looks a little different than what they've brought in at that position group recently. He can hit, he can run. He is making a really big jump from a small classification in California to Power 5 level, but he's someone I want to keep an eye on, and like one of the few guys I think my eyes are going to gravitate towards when we get to preseason camp to see, like, okay, are those tools transferable, like, close to instantly?
In the secondary, they were, I don't know how you want to grade, okay at times last year, decent at times, and then sort of, like, they did not allow a lot of explosive plays to their credit for the most part. You can probably actually think of the explosive that they actually add in the year, but they weren't dominant to be sure against the better quarterbacks they faced. At times they got carved. At times that I think they kind of just allowed what you'd maybe expect them to allow. You lose Jamie Robinson. We talk Shaheem Brown. Is there a guy in this group that, because everybody else is back? Yeah. Is there a guy in this group? Well, I guess Marion Cooper went to Colorado, but he didn't really play much last year and was, you know, injured, I think, at times.
He was for the, like, he was, if anyone's, like, done the Colorado episode on this, like, he was, I think, other than Derek McClendon, like, I think he's the one that hurt a little bit and they wish they'd kept because they liked what he was going to do at safety.
I think that's, I mean, we can go there with that question. Like, safety, I'll ask the question I asked earlier. Where's the spot on this team when you watch him, you're like, all right, it's not that the backups suck or that they'll never be ready, like, to, you know, eventually in their careers, but got to stay healthy here because the backups are not ready to play this year.
It is safety. It is safety for a variety of reasons. The defense didn't lose much, but the best player lost was Jamie Robinson because he was a really good college player. Like looking at the depth, like I got the numbers of scholarship chart pulled up in front of me here. We got Akeem Dent, who like at this point, I think we know what he is. He is a borderline replacement level safety when he's playing well, like above that. When he's playing poorly, it's below that. He's not always super consistent. Shaheem Brown, mentioned him earlier. And after that, man, it's like it's two freshmen in KJ Kirkland, who they like, and Conrad Hussey, who they like. But like, I don't know. Those are true freshmen. And then Ashlyn Barker, the JUCO guy, was kind of a flyer, but like saw him in person. Like, okay, yeah, he's a legit 6'3", 200 pounds. We'll see what that looks like with pads on. But like as far as guys who you know can play that position, they didn't hit in the transfer portal at safety. It ended up being a really weird market. At safety, because you kind of expected that to be one. Oh, you can find a replacement level, like third safety guy at any point. It didn't really happen. And like the guy they were close with, Keys, can't remember the first name, but you
went
from UAB.
And,
yeah, ended up going to Alabama. Yeah. Okay. You lost out to Alabama for a backup safety is how like Alabama's going to use them. And probably he was going to be your third safety as well. But like there just weren't a lot of options out there. So I say all that to say like, right now, I don't know who exists. I don't know if anyone's going to show up, you know, in the portal as a grad transfer coming in the next couple of weeks or so. But like, it's about time. Like, we're late June recording this. I'm not sure everyone in the Airbud, but like, it's getting pretty close to the end of the deadline to like find someone. So you're probably gonna have to move someone from cornerback to safety at some point in the season. I think is kind of where I'm getting at. Like, even just from a depth reliability standpoint, that's not the end of the world necessarily, but like I don't think it's ideal either because the staff tried to get a third safety in the portal and didn't. So by their own actions, like it would show like that wasn't the plan and that's where they're at. So yeah, that's a position group. Like if you get some injuries there, which we saw at the end of last season too, like mind you, like against Florida and against Oklahoma, that position group started taking some injuries and hits in game and it got really dicey. Like Cindy Williams had played linebacker for the better half of last season. They had to move him to safety because of injuries against Florida, and he misses a tackle attempt in Florida, gets back in the game on a long touchdown run. Like that's the kind of stuff, if you're trying to play for a national championship, you can't have your depth go like that all of a sudden. And I think that's – if I'm looking at this defense, I'm not overly concerned about anything, maybe other than safety depth.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news – you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So, if they did have to move a guy back to safety, it wouldn't be the end of the world because they have like I don't know they have a bunch of corners the fan base trust, but they definitely have a lot of the corners that just from talking to the staff, we know the staff has decent trust in. They do get Ventrell Cypress in the transfer portal from Virginia. Renardo Green, I know it's your guy, like played extremely well last year. Keeps getting better. Jerrion Jones, I don't know if he's actually good yet, but he's definitely improved.
He's not a liability anymore, which
It used to get picked on frequently. And then they should have some options at slot. You mentioned playing for a national championship. Obviously, I do the blue chip ratio. Florida State didn't make it this year. You had the transfers in. They went from like 38 to 41. They're probably like a full class away from doing that. Mm-hmm. They're clearly like, now that Caleb Williams and USC made it in, Florida State is the team that I would be most concerned about breaking through the ceiling. You know, Mariota almost did it with Oregon. Deshaun the first time around, you know, with Clemson. But I look and I'm like, okay, the last four programs to win national titles have averaged 7 first-round picks and they're too deep. Like, do you think this team is anywhere close to that? Like, I listen to you talk and I'm like, okay, good depth, a lot of good players, experienced players. Can they play on the same field as like a Georgia or like Ohio State or Michigan at their ceilings? Like, do they even have half that in the two deep? Like, first-rounders?
I mean, Jared Verse is the first one who comes to mind. Daryl Jackson, if he hits his ceiling, does, but he's a long way off from that. So no, like, I don't know if they have a lot of – and we'll see how some of these true freshmen – like, Lucas Simmons could become that, but he's not going to play this year. He's not going to be part of the two deep, to your point.
In fairness, we didn't always know exactly who was going first round from those teams too, right? Like, I don't know, you could have told me Justin Jefferson was definitely a first rounder, you know, before 2019 with LSU. Now he's the best receiver in the league. I just, like, are there guys that pop off to you? Like, do they have enough high level talent on this team to be considered a national title contender?
You know what's interesting to me, that I think so, and the data that you bring up is like, yeah, like, teams with it's legitimate. Like, teams with more NFL talent are probably going to be better equipped to win the most important games.
It's a tautology, right? Yeah. I mean, like,
but like, what I'm curious to see, this is like kind of the end of the COVID era, like, of guys getting 6-7 years more consistently. We've seen that in basketball kind of be a thing, right? And I understand totally different sports, but we've seen, like, older teams in college basketball have more success than maybe, you know, like, Kentucky, you know, 10 years ago was just like, let's just take all the blue chip guys. And yeah, if you can do that, that's the path to do it. That is the optimal, like, route to do it. This is the potentially, like, the next best path is, like, let's get a bunch of veteran guys, a bunch of experienced players. Let's get depth and try to, like, at the end of the season, have a capable team that's still standing. Cause so much about football is just, like, who's healthy at the end of the year, right? Like, that is a huge part of it. And that's what the depth that you're trying to compile is. So, like, I think FSU has a chance to be an outlier. Like, if you're trying to look at what their ceiling can be, bud, because they have very few, like, glaring holes, which is important. They have really good depth across the trenches, which is really important. That's something, like, the Philadelphia Eagles have been successful implementing. So you want to be overly confident with the trenches. So they have that. They have a quarterback. Could they beat, like, a Georgia, a Michigan, an Alabama in a one-off? You know, before they got Keon Coleman, I would have said probably not, or maybe like 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10. I think what Keon Coleman does, and I know it's a lot to put on one guy, but, like, he changes the math of, like, what a defense can do and how you have to defend this team now with two NFL guys. Like, I do think – I don't know if Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson are day one guys, to go back to your point, but, like, they're probably day two guys. They have that chance. And they have the chance to maybe be day one guys if they hit this year. But, like, they will force FSU – or they will force opponents who play FSU to respect – the passing game at all times. And I think you have an NFL caliber running back in Benson. I think you have a guy who, if he's not NFL caliber quarterback in Jordan Travis, he's at the very least is a really high-end college quarterback. And so, like, you have the firepower to give yourself a chance 4 times out of 10 now against those type of teams, 3 out of 4. Like, I think you have a chance now. You have a puncher's chance. If you catch him on the right day, you can do enough to make them uncomfortable. And if your defense is healthy at the end of the year, all the better for it. So, yeah, that's kind of how I look at it. It's like the veteran and the depth group, like, it might be able to help you increase your chances a little bit if you get to that point in the season in the playoffs and you're contending against teams with more pure raw talent.
You mentioned getting to that point. Like, the depth obviously will help you get to that point. Are they at a roster place now where losing to any non-Clemson ACC team is unacceptable?
I think with the expectations going into the year, yeah. I mean, things could happen, right?
Yeah, I don't mean in perpetuity. Like, even Clemson loses an ACC game once in a while now, but, like, for this season.
Like, if the NC State game happened again, the NC State game from 2020.
If Jordan stays healthy, obviously.
Right, yeah, there's, like, caveats to it, right? But if you have a game where you just kind of, like, shoot yourself in the foot over and over again, and like, then I think that you have enough answers in theory to where that shouldn't happen for the course of the game. Like, a couple drives, yeah, sure, yeah, you figure it out. But you shouldn't have this level of, like, vulnerability that we saw, or even, like, against Wake Forest, man. Like, they went with a wide 9 defensive line. Darius Washington hadn't played left tackle and hadn't played very well, like, or it wasn't super healthy going up to that point. And FSU struggled to adjust for, like, 3 series at a time. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you can't have if you're trying to win enough games to make the playoffs. So, like, yeah, you have enough answers now with guys who have experience, with the additions you've brought in, with the development you've done with this coaching staff, and continuity you have with the coaching staff, to where, like, you shouldn't be having, like, these big question marks midway through the season of, like, oh, can we, this guy play safety for us, or can this guy be a competent offensive tackle? Like, no, like, you shouldn't have those issues. So yeah, to answer your question directly, like, I would be concerned if they dropped a game where they just looked super sluggish and did a lot of silly things. I think that would not reflect well on Mike Norvell, and yeah, it's something that can't happen if you're trying to compete for what you think you can be competing for this season.
All right, we got to talk special teams really quickly. Fitzgerald was, for my money, the second worst kicker in the Power Five last year, and Bill Connolly had their field goal rating at 118th in the country. So, okay. Pretty terrible. I mean, 8 of 12 on anything under 40, and 4 of 8 on anything 40 plus. I know they went to the portal. Like, for FSU fans out there, do you think the portal, like the kicker addition, can help? Like, is there actually reason to think Fitzgerald's going to get better? Like, I know guys can get better, and of course, field goals high variance endeavor. So, like, guys do have up and down years, but that's a long way to improve to get to even okay.
And part of it is like what we saw last year. If it happens again. So what we saw last year wasn't even just a talent thing. It was like yips. It was mental. It was like, go back to the NC State game. Like, you probably lose that game because your play calling, or at least in part because of the play calling that you had to do. Even Wake Forest towards the end of the second half, they're like, you started rat trapping as a coaching staff a little bit, and you started kind of having to overthink things because you didn't trust what your kicker can do. And that was just making like a 35 yarder. Like, that was stripped away from you at times last season. And so, like, that's where the transfer portal addition of Tyler Keltner, I think, helps out a little bit. Bud is like, I don't know if he on like, I wasn't blown away by either kicker in the spring, to be honest. And I talk to people on staff, like, they're confident with it, but I'm not a kicking expert, but I do know if it goes in the upright or not. Yeah, right. Like, right. I do have that ability to judge and hear those things and see those things. And like, but it does, like, if there is a meltdown, if there is a reversion where it's even like this fundamental, can you get a 45 yard or not? Like, just make some basic kicks with Fitzgerald. I think at least you have, again, that insurance policy. And so, can it not completely derail your game plan? And I think they probably get to that point where you can trust it to, like, get to 65-70% of field goals. And if you do, like, that'd
be a large improvement. Yeah.
It was funny. I forget the math, like, off the top of my head, but I'm not sure, like, where it was in the middle of the season. You got better at the end of the year, really trust the walk-off field goal against Oklahoma, or not walk-off, but game-winning against Oklahoma. He got better to the point where you could at least trust him. And what was he field goal percentage wise? I don't know if you have it in front of you, Bud, but like,
he was, let me see, 8 of 12 on under 40 and 4 of 8 on over 40. So that's 12 of 20. So 60%.
Yeah. And he probably got to like 65, 68% by the end of the season, like in that stretch in the final games. That enough to where trust. Is it going to cost you a game? I don't know. But, like, you can't have your entire game plan go out the window because you can't trust your kicker to make something under 40 yards.
Exactly. Like, you can't. Yeah. Brett, really appreciate the time today. Everybody needs to check out Knowles 24/7. We have the QR code. I'm pointing the wrong direction. Got the QR codes this year. So if you guys are watching us on the YouTube, you can go right to the site. You guys do a tremendous job. And just constant content, accurate content. You guys, like, break all the news in the market. So other than that, I mean, you know, there's a lot for you guys to work on.
they have to deal with my personality sometimes, which can be a little grating, but other than that, that's the price you pay, guys.
Yeah, but like, hey, creativity comes with it, right? So
I'm a tortured soul, what can I say?
All right, man.
Baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.